This is the TTY Dialer, episode 21, for the week of March 20th through March 25th. Hi, this is Mark Lefonier, bringing you another weekly companion to WRVO Public Media's old-time radio show Tuned to Yesterday. Every night, we bring you the golden age of radio from comedy, mystery, thriller, action, romance, sci-fi, westerns, and more to what we like to call your theater of the mind. And in this podcast, I'll be bringing you a little bit more background on the shows, some fun with sound from radio's past, also a look at the programs coming up for the week. And for the start of this podcast, a little accordion.
Well, there, old honeybee, what you buzzing around so fast for? Go light someplace for a while, huh? You can just sit there and relax with the old Garraway gang for a few minutes, and I think it'll do you some good, because we've got one of the best sounding little gangs you ever heard. We've got Constance Russell and Jack Haskell, who buzz up some pretty fine stuff. Art Van Dam, Dial Soap, the famous deodorant soap that brings you confidence on these warm June days, or any day throughout the year. Dial, you know, contains an ingredient called AT7, which you may never have heard of, but which can do you a big favor. Removes old worries you might have had about perspiration odor by removing the basic cause. Just get some Dial soap and feel fresh and clean all over.
Dial, that's D-I-A-L, Dial soap. The newest, nicest way to stay free from odor, safe all day.
That was the opening and accompanying commercial for the Dial Dave Garraway program. Dial Soap sponsoring his show of music and patter out of Chicago station WMAQ for a brief time in the late 1940s. And even though he was picked up for national broadcast by NBC after just a year or so on the air, his voice was already heard in several states thanks to the station's powerful transmitter and, of course, the right weather conditions. Early on in Dave Garraway's radio career, he really put himself through his paces by attending NBC announcer school, and he graduated at the low level of his class, second to last, but he ended up making his way to America's first radio station, KDKA in Pittsburgh, where he was a roving reporter. Then he made his way to Chicago and was an announcer for the popular soap opera John's Other Wife until he joined the Navy during World War II. After the war, he returned to the air as a disc jockey this time, playing jazz records for the most part, and he gathered a big following pretty quickly and started winning Billboard magazine polls for Best DJ with his program The 1160 Club and others. In 1951, the same year of the clip we just heard, he transitioned his relaxed and intimate delivery to television and is now best remembered for being the first host of television's Today Show. Dave Garraway became a fixture in the lives of many viewers throughout the 1950s and was really one of the giants of early television. But he had left a trail of success on radio before moving to the tube, and later it didn't stray too far, as he had a hand in radio's first real magazine-style show, Monitor, in the mid-1950s through the early 60s, where he was a weekly host, and he would end up capping his career on the air with some work on KFI in the early 70s. He wasn't only known as a great communicator, but by his nickname, The Communicator, and his broadcasting story and impact is really quite vast, which is why it came as a surprise to so many that following complications with the surgery, he had taken his own life in 1982. Over the years, Garraway had been battling depression, and it overcame him after that surgery, and it was something that his co-workers, like the young Barbara Walters, noticed during the tail end of his Today Show run in 1962. His wife even honored his struggle following his death by helping to set up the Dave Garraway Laboratory for the Study of Depression at the University of Pennsylvania. And in this radio moment from later in the broadcast from the show we heard a couple of minutes ago, Dave Garraway in a way acknowledged his low times with this brief moving story.
Hey, did you read on the papers or on the radio, on the AP wire and UP2, I think, yesterday, about the Nazi soldier they found over in Poland, the one who was buried alive in a tomb for 6 years? I dreamed about that half of the night last night with my eyes wide open. I counted up all my worries and all the twists and tortures that I think I go through like you do, too. And then I just wrote them all off thinking about what that guy went through for 6 years. You remember, he was in a supply bunker, and they blasted the opening shut in 1945. That was before the first atom bomb went off. Sounds like 1,000 years ago. And he lived in there for 6 years, got air through a little vent that wasn't destroyed, had lots of cigarettes and schnapps and food, and they had candles up to 2 years ago, and then 2 years ago they used up their last candle. and he lived in the dark for 2 years. And yet so tremendous is the human spirit that he made it. He's gonna, I understand, be all right when he gets over the temporary blindness of darkness for 6 years. So next time you get sorry for yourself, as we all do, think about that guy. Think about him coming out, looking around, finding us all ready to go underground. Maybe he'll want to get back in there. I wouldn't be surprised. Made me feel sort of better than I have. We got a cheery little duet?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be good about here. Go ahead, kids.
Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid.
Coming up on Tuned to Yesterday, this Monday night, March 20th at 10, it's an hour of mystery with episodes of Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and Ellery Queen with the case of the Dead Man's Cavern from 1944. Then it's a Western. The Lux Radio Theater adapts the motion picture The Plainsman from 1937. On Tuesday, March 21st at 10, it's comedy from the new Edgar Bergen Hour, at least it was in 1956. Then stories of true history, though on the weird side, it's episodes of Strange as It Seems and Ripley's Believe It or Not.
You know, we've really got a great many things in this country that came from the other Americas. Why, they had skyscrapers 100 years before we in the United States ever thought of them. And in Trujillo, Peru, I saw a pyramid that was almost twice the size of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, even the word hoosegow came from the other Americans.
Here are these programs Monday, March 20th and Tuesday, March 21st from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. A golden age of radio show that gave its competition a real run for its money while giving out thousands of dollars itself made its debut this Tuesday, March 21st in 1948. The show was Stop the Music. It was a game show that actually called random people at home who were expected to be listening to the program, meaning the entire country, to answer the question of what song the band was playing on the air at the time. And the prizes were worth it. Everything from appliances to silver sets and enormous cash amounts, even by today's measure. It was really a frantic-sounding hour, hosted by Burt Parks, that brought top songs of the day with singers Kay Armon and Dick Brown. And it was an exciting hour at that, with the fast pace of the music and the very real prospect that not just someone in the studio audience, but anyone listening could receive that phone call to get the chance to guess the song. Since its inception, the ABC radio show was scheduled on the air opposite two comedy legends, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy on NBC at 7:30, and Fred Allen's program at 8 o'clock, which wrapped up at 8:30, and Stop the Music was an hour long. So as that hour went on, more and more listeners would dial their radio away from these comedy greats and hear Stop the Music. And this started to present a real problem for Fred Allen and his team, who started to feel trapped. At first, Fred made jokes about it on the air. At one point, he even did a skit called Cease the Melody, but it only made the loyal fans laugh, and the droves of listeners who had turned away couldn't have cared less. And as Fred's ratings fell, the built-in audience started to hear a desperation from his show as it started to open with this message.
If within the next 30 minutes you, any listener in the continental United States, answer a telephone call from any giveaway radio program, and because you are listening to this show, you miss an opportunity to win any gift then being offered, Fred Allen guarantees to make good by furnishing an equivalent gift or its value up to $5,000.
National Surety Corporation guarantees that Fred Allen will perform his agreement up to a total of $50,000.
The incentive to listen apparently had little effect, as the ratings put Fred Allen, once in the top 15, down into the lower 30s, which in great part led to the show's cancellation in 1949. Even though Fred couldn't survive the listeners who had turned away from the show, they didn't do it out of spite. They just really enjoyed Stop the Music. So here's some sound from a broadcast of the show from January 21st, 1951.
Okay, let's try a tune they sing very prettily down in Italy, and here's how it goes. Operator, where to now? Lancaster, California. All right, and who's waiting to talk to us out there? Harold Tillotson. Hello, Mr. Tillotson. Hey, can you hear me all right? Well, fine. Harold, this is Bert Parks in New York on Stop the Music. We're calling for Buick. And if you can tell us the name of the selection the orchestra was just playing, we'll send you a beautiful Tappan gas range with a famous Visualite oven and exclusive Tellu set. What's the name of it? The radio is away from your phone. You couldn't hear it? Well, now, you want to go back and we'll play a little more for you, all right? Now, you hurry. How far is it? 15 feet. All right, you run on over there, Harold. We'll wait. Are you there? Okay, play just a little more. Okay, Harry? Here we go. All right, now we got to wait for him to get back. Harold? He's not back yet. Harold! Come back to the phone, Harold. Hello? We lost him completely. Hello? Harold? Hello? Did we lose him? He must have gone right out the front door. What happened? Huh? You still got him on the line, operator? Hello, Harold, if you hear me, in Lancaster, California on the radio, I'm the fellow who was talking to you on the phone. Oh, there. Hello, Harold. Where you been? Huh? Got interference. That's the longest 15 feet I ever heard of in my life. Harold, I'm awfully sorry. We're going to send you, though, a lovely $100 Evans fitted handbag for Mrs. Tillotson. Thank you very much. Good luck to you. Bye. All right, that means another studio contestant has an opportunity. And may I have your name, please?
Hal Gerner.
Mr. Gerner, what do you do?
I'm a shoe salesman.
Well, 10 and a half, meet 11 and a half. How are you? Glad to see you. Well, I really didn't think that was funny, but I thought, you know, that it would, I'd try it for size. Tell me, Mr. Gerner, what type of shoes do you sell?
I'm in women's shoes.
You know, if you hadn't mentioned it, I don't think we'd ever notice that at all. Huh? Well, tell me something else I want to ask you. Why is it that women's shoes cost so much? Can you tell me that?
Sure. You see, the less there is to a shoe, the more detail there is. And, of course, the more detail, the more operations. The more operations, the more steps. And the more steps, the more expensive.
But why are women's shoes more expensive? Now, will you tell me, please, what was the name of that selection?
Oui, Marie.
Oui, Marie, that's right. Thank you very much. All right, now get set for our first All-American Melody, a tune I'm sure everybody will know. What's the title?
Coming out this Wednesday night on Tune to Yesterday on March 22nd at 10, it's science fiction for an hour from NBC's two big sci-fi shows, Dimension X and X-1, then an hour of crime, its broadcasts of Dragnet, and yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This Thursday night, March 23rd, it's an hour of drama from The Marriage and the Columbia Workshop, and at 11, it's an hour of horror from episodes
Stop
of... What?
The music!
Okay, get back to the game.
All together, audience, what was the name of that song? Alexander's Ragtime Band. And now let's listen to Kay Armon sing.
Did you know the song? It was on the tip of my tongue. I sort of did. Anyway, on this Thursday night at 11 o'clock, it's horror for an hour from episodes of Inner Sanctum and a broadcast of suspense that is probably among their scariest from the series called The House in Cypress Canyon.
I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness. And in that closet, first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. So, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now, deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding.
Hear these shows Wednesday, March 22nd, and Thursday, March 23rd, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. By the way, in the world of podcasting this month, people like myself who produce them are encouraging our listeners to take a family member or a friend by the hand and introduce them to podcasts and how easy they are to download and to listen to and really incorporate them into their lives. It's a movement to get more people listening to podcasts because if we do that, then the whole podcasting community becomes even stronger. A podcast that I've been enjoying as of late is the Radiolab podcast produced by WNYC. You can find it right at their website. It's Jad Abumrad and Robert Krulwich digging into ideas of the world and really opening our eyes in a very innovative way in terms of their sound patterns. Even one episode, they bring you down the path of the phenomenon of the War of the Worlds, which their take is pretty fascinating. So try to make a point of it this week. Show a family member or friend how to listen to podcasts. And if you're on social media, like Twitter or Facebook, let us know that you did it by posting on Twitter or Facebook the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. Now, while the War of the Worlds created its own mini mass hysteria, the seeds of that were planted on the air in another way, not as scary, on this Friday, March 24th in 1935, when one of radio's most popular talent shows made its national debut on NBC. Major Bowes Amateur Hour made the move from local station WHN in New York to NBC affiliates across the country, and it was at a time when radio was really still in its early days and the networks were barely 10 years old. An on-air phenomenon started to happen when the country seemed to be coming quickly gripped by amateur fever, with tens of millions of listeners tuning in to hear a very simple concept, people showing off their talents. The man and host of the program, Major Bowes, invited singers, musicians, tap dancers, animal callers, and anyone that could be appreciated while heard to his show, and he really helped pioneer what was known as unscripted entertainment on the air, a formula that continues to be popular decades later. At the time, in the mid-1930s, it wasn't just the audience that had the talent show craze, but quite literally, thousands of the hopeful people who packed their bags and put their lives aside to travel to New York for a chance to be on the Major Bowes Amateur Hour. On audition days, lines stretched city blocks, with people armed with banjos, their tap routines, songs, and imitations, and they would wait hours for their chance for a couple of minutes of airtime. At one point, the show was receiving 10,000 applications a week, and the producers held close to 4,000 auditions a month. And really, that's an impossible task of narrowing down the 1,000 weekly tryouts down to just 20 acts for the hour-long show. There was quite an overflow of people coming into New York from across the country, some even selling their houses to finance the trip. And it seems that history tells us more about the heartache and poverty from its participants than its actual impact on their careers. Newsweek reported at the time that during 1 month in the show's first year on the air, over 1,000 people had sought help at one of New York City's many relief shelters after being turned away from the amateur hour. On the flip side, Major Bowes got rich, really rich. He was making about $2 million a year off the program, which is about $35 million in today's money, making about twice as much as the highest paid radio comedians of that time, like Jack Benny and Eddie Cantor. Although on the air, Major Bowes sounded like your everyman, he had roots in the theater, and he built one named the Capitol in New York after his time in the First World War, and started the first local version of his talent show on radio in a program called Major Bowes Capitol Family, which was the model for the national amateur show. Out of the 20 or so weekly contestants on his show, the person who won got the exposure to the country that they wanted that night and were invited to be part of Major Bowes' traveling show, which drew big audiences when they were on the road. Within a short time, the radio show introduced a voting system that invited listeners to call in from across the country and vote for their favorite performer from that night. And for this, each week, a different honor city was chosen to receive the calls. Now, this might all seem like a lot of fanfare for what amounted to 1 hour of airtime with performers that technically weren't professionals, but at its peak, around 45 million people were listening, which, let's say in 1937, that was about a third of the country. Here's some sound from the Major Bowes Amateur Hour, heard in 1939.
Mansfield, the telephone is Maine 9900. That's the Huffman sisters from Paterson, New Jersey. I have a telegram here stating that 500 members of Mansfield's Chamber of Commerce are gathered in the Westinghouse Auditorium listening to the program. I wish I might be there. And the 200th caller from Mansfield, Miss Bella Young, 122 Glenwood Boulevard. And from New York, Mrs. Evelyn Greers, 46 West 53rd. First telephone bull, the Harlem Rostabouts, got 1,102 calls. Helen Dixon from Mansfield 3696, Red Bill Lane 964, and Robert Shawn 118. Marion Caruso, the illustrious name, 12 years of age. She's a dancer from Wilkes-Barre, and she dances to the music of Melancholy Baby. Pretty much all the facts there. How long have you been dancing, Marion?
I've been dancing 5 years from Tony Grant, and singing lessons, too.
Good. Do you practice much?
My daddy makes me practice 3 hours a day, but I love him anyway.
What's your daddy's business?
My daddy's a salesman, and he has a Plymouth car.
You have a very nice daddy, and I love him, too.
My daddy says he's going to buy a 1940 Plymouth.
Oh, I love him like a brother. All right, Melancholy Baby, let's go. Caruso, pupil of the gifted Tony Grant of Wilkes-Barre.
So you may be wondering if the show ever had any notable talent emerge from it, and the answer is a resounding not really. That is, except for a singer that would be known for his solo work, but on Major Bose's Amateur Hour, was part of a group called the Hoboken Four. It was a 19-year-old Frank Sinatra.
Who'll speak for the group?
I will. I'm Frank. We're looking for jobs. How about it? Everyone that's ever heard us liked us. We think we're pretty good. And we play real swing music, too.
Real modern swing music, ultra-modern music. What's your tune?
The Curse of an Aching Heart.
Curse of an Aching Heart.
You made me what I am today. I hope you're satisfied.
Coming up this Friday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock, it's our sitcom hour with back-to-back episodes of the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Sort of rare in the sitcom world, but a two-part story called The Wrestler from 1949. Then it's Adventure at 11 from Rocky Fortune, and a great series called Cloak and Dagger.
We still are using field pieces from the Franco-Prussian War, but this is a beauty. Now gather up your things, Captain Scarpella. I'll be back in a few minutes. I'll be back!
The fog's disappeared into the woods. The whole thing seemed like a crazy nightmare. The whole forest surrounded by Germans. And yet, here I was passing the time of day just like nothing at all with a Frenchman who had a price on his head.
On the Saturday evening show at 10, it's an hour of quiz programs from Dr. IQ Jr. and 20 Questions. Then it's horror from Murder at Midnight and the Black Museum with Orson Welles. You can hear these programs Friday, March 24th, and Saturday, March 25th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. And you can listen live on the air or as we stream the station live at WRVO.org. And that's going to do it for this week's TTY Dialer. Remember this week, if you do have time, show a friend or a family member how to listen to podcasts. It doesn't have to be this one, but just one that you think that they might enjoy. Also, if you have any questions for me about old-time radio, the Tune to Yesterday show, this podcast, or anything along those lines, send me an email to mark@wrvo.org. That's M-A-R-K at wrvo.org. Until next week, thanks for listening.